Okay, so the next 2 weeks, this week I actually know I'm doing next week. Next week is one of those weeks where I have like a million shurim every day, so like everything is has to be prepared in advance. So this week, so one of the central themes of Bamidbar, the parsha, not the sefer, is the role of the Levim, the census of the Levim, the unique role. So we're going to talk about that today. And next week, we're going to discuss why the laws that appear in Naso are there, sort of a big picture of why we have suddenly in the middle of this whole story, Sota and Nazir and all that stuff. That'll be next week, I hope. Okay. I don't know. You know, sometimes I plan and then we end up having to, you know, spend an extra week on something that came up. Okay. But the topic I want to talk about this week is the sanctity of the Levium. So, right, in Bamidbar, right off the bat, right in the middle of all these numbers, it opens up with a census of the Jewish people, an independent census of the Levium. And if you look now, for me, this was great because when I think I've mentioned that my Bar Mitzvah Parsha and Ofer Parsha were Bamidbar. So for my bar mitzvah, at least, I didn't really know what to talk about in Bamidbar. It's mostly numbers and stuff. But the half of the parsha is not about numbers. It's about the uniqueness of the Levium. So that was easy. I'm a Levi. I could talk about it. That's what I used then. So, you know, in my mind, it's emblazoned that that is part of the theme of Bamidbar. So I had to talk about it at least for a bit. But you get that, or much discussion about this. So if you go in Perek Aleph, Pasuk Memchet and Memtet, so that after counting all of the Bnei Yisrael and getting to our 603,550, really actually Pasuk Memzayim, the Pesukim tell you about Leviim, Matev Adam Lo Et Bakitu Betocham, but the Leviim, and now we ran out of search. Do we? Are we have? We're just enough. We're just enough.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, good. No, it was because the printer broke in the middle, and that was that's fine. I was hoping we have Sorshi. That's my... Okay. So included in this number was not the Levium. And then in Memchet Memtet, you find out, by Deber Adonai Moshe Lemor, Achem Netei Levi Lo Tivkod, Rosham Lo Tisa B'toch B'nei Israel, the tribe of Levi you won't count, you won't lift up their heads amongst the rest of the Jews. You will count them and give them jobs independently of everybody else. Right? They will be responsible for the Mishkan. And then as the Mishkan is taken down, they'll carry it while it's traveling. They carry it when it's time to camp. So then they set it up. And then towards the end of the parsha, you get the specific delineation of the three families, each of their roles, who is in charge of the Mishkan, who's in charge of the Kelim, who's in charge of everything. And much of Bamidbar is really about talking about why or how the Levium are unique. And then after in addition to the discussion of the uniqueness of the Levium, you also get the redemption of the firstborns by the Levium, that the firstborns either have to be redeemed by a Levi, and anyone who doesn't have a Levi parallel to them needs to redeem themselves with cash. So the Pesukim then go on to tell you that there's 22,000 Levium, 22,273 firstborns, and therefore 22,000 lucky Bechoras don't need to pay anything. They have a Levi who redeems them, and the remaining 273 need to pay money. How you choose it? So the Gemara goes through all types of different ways, right? Either they would do they did some sort of lottery. The Gemara describes how unfair the lottery could seem to people, because you do the lottery, right? Let's say by the time you got to the end, all the Levi cards had been used up. So then the last ones will say, "Hey, the only reason that I have to pay money is because I went last." So, right. So the Gemara goes through different ways that you can do it so that it'll still be fair. So the Gemara ends up concluding that there was 22,546 slips, enough Levi slips that said you are already redeemed, you don't have to pay, for all the Bechoras, and 273 that said you have to pay. And it was a miracle that Right, so theoretically, every one of the Bechoros could have gotten a slip that said Levi, but it was a miracle, and exactly the right number got the money one, and therefore they redeemed it with money. Whatever it is. But this all begs the question of why and when did it happen that the Leviim became unique? Right? That's sort of the working assumption of Bamidbar, that they are unique. But when did that happen? And you look through Chumash and Tanakh, really, and the answer is it's very hard to figure it out. So here I gave you, now moving to the source sheets, there are radically different indications as you go through Chumash. So you look in Shmot, Perek Chof Chet. So at some point during the building of the Mishkan, Hashem says to Moshe, "Vata hakrev lechad Aaron achicha ved banav ito mitoch bnei Yisrael lechan oli Aaron Nadav Avihu Elazar v'Tamar bnei Aaron. Now bring your brother Aaron and his sons from among the Jews to serve as my kohanim." And Aaron Nadav Avihu Elazar v'Tamar bnei Aaron. It sounds like from that pasuk that they became unique at that moment, right? At that moment, Hashem says to Moshe, "Now go find your brother and his family. Make them kohanim." So, at least the kohanim, if you just read that pasuk, you would think that they actually get chosen during the process of building the Mishkan. Right now is the time that we're building the Mishkan. Hashem needs somebody to work in the Mishkan, so He chooses the kohanim at that point. If you look at number two, though, in Dvarim Perek Yud, this is describing. This is describing the same basic moment after the sin of the Egel when you get the second luchot, right? So ba'eid ahi amara adonai elai psal lecha shnei luchot avanim karishonim ba'alei elai ara v'asita lecha aron eitz. So after the sin and after the tshuva, so Hashem says to Moshe, "You can come up. I'll give you a second set of luchot." And you'll make an aron. And then I'll write on the luchot what was on the original luchot, on the original tablets that you broke. And at that time, God chose the Leviim. Right? So this actually confirms sort of the indication you get in the first pasuk that it wasn't like God had previously chosen the Leviim. At that moment, when they were building the Mishkan and they were going through this process, they chose the Leviim. And it also sounds like it's somehow linked to the Egel, the fact that the Mishkan was happening post Egel. Something about that was why they were chosen, but they were chosen at that time. However, right, you look at number three in Sefer Shmuel, you get a totally different indication. Vayavo ish Elohim eli vayomre lav karma amar Adonai haniglo negleiti el beit avicha biyotam mitzrayim levet paro. The Navi comes to Eli, and in the process of him criticizing Eli, he says, "Well, you know, Hashem revealed, I revealed myself to your fathers," meaning to the Kohanim, "in Egypt. And I chose you from among all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to ascend my altar, to burn incense, to carry an ephod before me, and I signed to your father's house all offerings by fire of the Israelites, of the Jews." So in Shmuel, it sounds like, no, right? This wasn't some decision that happened during the inauguration of the Mishkan. It wasn't some consequence of the Leviim, let's say, not sinning in the Egel. This was something that was predetermined and was true already in the time of Mitzrayim. And the truth is, you look at number four, this is during during Kabbalat HaTorah, you find out when God is explaining how close to the mountain each group can come, He talks about the Kohanim as an independent unit, which means that they must have been an independent unit even before they were chosen, so to speak, during the inauguration of the Mishkan. So far we have two basic times. Either they were already chosen in Mitzrayim, which is what it sounds like in Shmuel, which is sort of proven by the fact that in Parshas Yisro, they are already chosen, right? The Kohanim already exist as an independent unit. But then you have the simple understanding of Shmot Perek Chet and Dvarim Perek Yud, that they weren't chosen until after the Egel, right? Something about that process during the inauguration of the Mishkan. Number five, this is in Parshas Naso, you get yet a third indication, which is Kachet Alavim Mitoch Bnei Yisrael V'Tiar Ta'otam, that only now in Bamidbar is Moshe told, take the Levium. Now, they may have existed as an independent unit, but they're not actually serving. So at some level, the Levium are only made into Levium in Naso. I mean, maybe they existed as a unit earlier, but they're only actually, they actually go through their dedication process only in Naso. And that, you know, as we, the Psukim we already sort of saw in Bamidbar, it sounds like it's here in Bamidbar that the Levim are really chosen, which is Vayomer Adonai Moshe, Bekod Kol Bechor Zachar Levnei Yisrael Min Chodesh Vamala Vesad Mispar Shemotam. Right, count the firstborns. Milach Kachtad Alvim Li Ani Adonai Tachad Kol Bechor Bnei Yisrael Bet Bemad Alvim Tachad Kol Bechor Bemad Bnei Yisrael. Take all of the Levim for me because they are mine as a trade for the Bechor. So you get these two psokim in Bamidbar. Either they're chosen as they're being switched for the Bechor, or they're inaugurated here in Naso. So that's sort of three possible periods, right? We hear that they're chosen in Mitzrayim. In other places, we hear they're not chosen until the inauguration of Mishkan. And in a certain sense, they're not even really inaugurated as Levim until Bamidbar. There are sort of other sources. I gave you the Book of Jubilees, right? This is not actually part of our canon, but it is a very old, right, very old Jewish source. Right? Book of Jubilees is one of the Apocrypha, is one of the books that's, you know, written around the same time as Tanakh, except in the Christian canon, not in the Jewish canon, is written by Jews in that period. Even if it's not canonical, right, you can see what Jews were thinking in, let's say, the time of Tanakh. So, in Book of Jubilees, chapter 30, you get this: Ubaruch Levi uvanav leolam tachar asher kinu lasot tzedakah u'mishpat nekama v'kol mekomamim al Yisrael. Levi and his children were blessed because they were jealous to do justice and righteousness and revenge those who rise up against Israel. And this is in the story of Dinah, that Shimon and Levi, when Dinah had been captured and raped, they stood up and fought against Shechem, which we discussed, I don't know, 2 years ago, whether they were right or wrong, but at least in Jubilees, they had a tradition that Levi had been chosen already. Forget Mitzrayim was chosen, like Levi the person had already been chosen because he'd shown that he was zealous for God. In number eight, you find out in Shemot, again, this is in Mitzrayim, that when Moshe, Hashem is talking to Moshe, he tells him, "Vayichar af Adonai b'Moshe, vayomer Aharon, halo Aharon achicha Levi, yadati ki daberi daber hu, v'gam hinehu yotze likratecha, v'ra'acha v'samach bilipo." Hashem became angry at Moshe and said that your brother Aharon, the Levi, right, now how he becomes a Kohen is what Rashi will deal with in just a moment, but again, in Mitzrayim, Aharon is called a Levi, as if that's a special, right, a special role, a special title. So when exactly, right, when did it happen? The Levim became special. Like, the Torah just assumes the Levim are special. They're the ones who work in the Beit HaMikdash. The Kohanim work in the Beit HaMikdash. The Levim aid them. They carry the Mishkan. They're not counted in the normal census. They act to redeem the firstborns. But when did that happen, right? This is just a given of Jewish life, but when did it happen? Was it something that happened already during the time of the Avot, right, during the time of Levi the person? Did it happen in Mitzrayim? Did it happen in, right, after Mitzrayim? Did it happen during the inauguration of Mishkan? Did it happen a year later when they're actually doing the service? Like, when did this magic moment happen? Why and when did the Levim become unique? So this is what the Mefarshim really, really struggled with. So, what we're going to do is just try to trace this and figure out when and why they became unique. So, if you look at number 9, right, we'll start looking at it. So, Rashi tells us on this pasuk of Aharon being referred to as a Levi. So he says as follows: Veicharaf Rabbi Shuvin Kar Chomer Kol Charon Av Shabbat Torah Oseh Roshem Vezelo Nemar Bo Roshem Velo Matzina Shabbat Onesh Al Yedei Oto Charon. Rabbi Shua ben Karcha had said that every other time God gets angry, there is some consequence to that. But Amar Lo, Rabbi Yossi said it's not true. Af bizu nemar barosham. The fact that Moshe refused to go down to Egypt, he kept fighting God and telling him, I don't want to be the leader of the Jewish people. And Hashem gets angry at him, there is a consequence. How do I know? Because Halo Aharon Achicha HaLevi. It says that he was a Levi. Shaya atid lihyot Levi velo Kohen. Aaron was supposed to be a Levi and not a Kohen. Vakuna yiti omer latzeit mimcha. And the kahuna was supposed to come from Moshe. Me'ata lo yechein, elohu yiyeh Kohen, vata Levi. But now, because you were dragging your feet, you will be the Levi, and he'll be the Kohen. Shneamar Moshe Isha Elohim Banav Yikaru Al Shevet HaLevi. Because it says in Divrei HaYamim that Moshe, his children, will be of the Leviim. So Rashi takes the position that in Mitzrayim, the Kohanim and the Leviim were unique. And at this moment, right, so Rashi, you learn two things from Rashi. One is that already in Mitzrayim, the Kohanim and the Leviim had been chosen. Point two is that they actually got switched, who got to be Kohen and who got to be Levi. But Rashi's assumption is that already in Egypt, both the role of Kohen and Levi had already been given out. And when Moshe dragged his feet and didn't want to lead the Jewish people, so he lost his right to be the Kohen. Aaron became the Kohen, he became the Levi. But the two roles existed already at that point. And Rashi repeats this several times in his commentaries. You look at number 10. Paro says to Moshe and Aaron, why are you talking about freedom so much? Right? Why are you tafriu ta'ami masav? Why are you making the Jews not work? So the Midrash, and Rashi quotes it, said, what do you mean tafriu ta'ami masav? Right? What does it mean that you're taking them? Tavdil v'tarachik otami milachtam. Right, you're separating the Jews from their work. Sheshomin lachem, because they listen to you. Visurin lanuach min hamilacha, because they think that they're not going to work. Right, because you say they're going to go free. So Paro said, why are you doing this to them? But then you look in 11. Right, Rashi picks up on. Okay, so I understand why Paro is angry, because the Moshe and Aaron are trying to foment a rebellion and a push for freedom. But how can he say, right, tafriu ta'ami ma'asav, and then say to them, l'chulam lach techem? He says, right, why are you making the Jews not work? You go back to do your own work. So Rashi picks up on the fact and said, what do you mean, pick up on your own, right, your work? Aren't Moshe and Aaron also his slaves? Why doesn't he just say, go back to your, right, to my work as my slave? So Rashi says, no. L'chulam lach techem, sheyesh lachem lasod v'techem, go home, do your own work. Aval melechet shibud Mitzrayim lo haital shivto shel Levi. But in fact, the Levim weren't, right, the Egyptian slavery had not been imposed on the tribe of Levi. Teidal lecha. And I'll prove it to you. Sherei Moshe v'Aharon yotzim u'bayim. Because Moshe and Aaron were freely walking around and had the time to talk about freedom. You only have time to talk about freedom, right? They were the union leaders, right? They're not actually working, right? They work for the union, right? They don't do your job. They seem to be totally, right, free doing, right? They're free to have meetings and talk about, right, you know, whatever the colleges are, what, 5.5 weeks on strike now, right? They're what?
I think it's more.
I don't know. We have people who come to, you know, some of the students come to the Beit Midrash now, right? Suddenly they're free every day, right? 5.5 weeks in, right? It's scary. But right, Moshe and Aaron are basically, it's clear they're not working, right? They don't have to be on the picket lines, right? They're free to come and have the meetings, right, with and negotiate with the boss, right? Because they're apparently not working, right? So Rashi picks up on this and says it must be that Levi already in Mitzrayim weren't slaves, right? So Rashi, taking all the evidence, tells us at least the unique status of the tribe of Levi existed already in Egypt. And he tells you a second point, that he doesn't just think that the Levim as a tribe had been chosen. He thinks that the unique roles of Levim and Kohanim had already existed, at least in potential, in Egypt, such that you can trade them between Aaron and Moshe. So Rashi takes very strongly the position that they were they were chosen, right, all the way at that moment, and then, you know, that's it, right? There may be some tweaks to it, but the notion that there was a tribe that was chosen at least was true by the time they were in Egypt. Now, Rashi has a problem, which is, as we saw, the psukim seem to indicate that this isn't true, right? They seem to indicate, right? Now, this Rashi works well with the pasuk in Shmuel, right? The pasuk in Shmuel, God saying to Eli, I already appeared to your forefathers in Egypt, and I chose you to be the Kohen in the Mikdash. Well, that's what Rashi takes. Rashi takes Shmuel and says, yes, it's true, the Kohanim in Egypt were already the chosen tribe amongst the chosen people. But then why do other psukim in the Torah seem to indicate that it's not true, that the Levim became unique because of they didn't sin in the Egel Hazav, because they didn't sin in the golden calf? Why is there implications in the psukim that the Levim are unique because when Moshe said, Mila Hashem Eli, right, who is going to fight for God on my behalf, the Levim took up arms and rooted out the evil amongst the Jewish people. Why did the psukim indicate that that was the moment when the Levim became unique? So if you look at number 12, I gave you from Al HaTorah. So now that I've sort of figured out how this website works, right, I can explain that. So I've mentioned it before, but alhatorah.org is a website started by Hill Nevetsky, Rabbi Hill Nevetsky, which is sort of open source. It's not, I mean, it's not fully. You have to, you know, you ask him to add, if you want to add an entry, and then he sort of reviews it. And, you know, they put these summaries of the Mefarshim, and they put different approaches of the Mefarshim. But one of the things that he insists on doing is going, taking each position of the Mefarshim that you illustrate, and then going through the textual issues in the Torah and trying to explain how they would deal with each textual problem. So he suggests as follows, or whoever edited this entry suggests as follows. I'll say it outside, then you can see it inside. There's two reasons why the Levim we might emphasize that the Levim were chosen, so to speak, because they didn't sin in the Egel. One is to say they actually weren't chosen until after the Egel. And the fact that they didn't sin in the golden calf, and instead they fought on behalf of God, is why they were chosen. But there's another equally plausible explanation, which is, if you have been for hundreds of years tasked with being the unique tribe, and you know that your job as a tribe is to one day work in the Beit HaMikdash, when the Jewish people start worshiping an idol, and Moshe gets up and says, who is for God? It's been instilled in your family that you are supposed to be that person, right? You're much less likely to sin in the Egel if you know you are the chosen tribe that's going to work in the Beit HaMikdash. You're much more likely to pick up arms on behalf of God when Moshe calls for it if you have always been the family that's dedicated to God. So it could be that Rashi will say, why is it that the Torah seems to imply that the Levim were chosen only after the Egel Azav? Not because they weren't chosen then, but because that was then they proved themselves. Right? That was when it showed that the fact that they had been designated hundreds of years earlier to be the tribe that would work in the Mishkan, that's when it, right, expressed itself. So that's what he writes, right? According to this position, it is possible that it was specifically the Levites who had already been designated to serve God who heeded Moshe's call to act against the calf's idolaters. In other words, the Levites' selection was the impetus for their taking action rather than a consequence of it, right? And, you know, so that point I think is really important because, right, if you had to ask, right, I think this is a very fundamental question about the Levium, right, is, are the Levim chosen because they're unique, right? Or do they express uniqueness because they were chosen? Right? This is like, you know, this is like a classic educational question, right? Do you recognize greatness, or do you, you know, this is also one of the things they teach us in Smicha, right? Is if you have the problem congregant, right? You have the person who talks all the time in shul, right? So one way of getting him to stop talking in shul, it doesn't always work, but you can try, is to go over to him and say, you know, I know how much you care about davening. I want to start a program in the shul to encourage people to not talk during davening. Are you willing to work with me on developing a plan for the shul? Right? Now, some people will just say, the rabbi's pulling my leg, but some people won't even realize. The cognitive dissonance is so great, they'll just say, wow, the rabbi recognizes how much I care about davening, and they won't even notice, but by being chosen, suddenly, right, they become committed to davening. Right? So, this, right, the question of the Levim you have to ask is, okay, is it that God said, hey, look, there are these already motivated people, and I want them to work in my Mishkan? Or do you say, God just chose Levim? Why he chose Levim? I don't know. It needed to be somebody. And what, it's them, right? They grow into the role. And they've done all type of psychological studies on this, right? That if you, right, people who think, right, you know, if, right, you give a test to a class and you give back the grades and they think that they failed on the first test, they're more likely to fail on the second test. If they think they got 100 on the first test, they're more likely to get 100 on the second test, regardless of what the scores are, right? Because people's self-image is formed by how they think they've performed in the past, by who they think they are, right? So, again, did Levi become unique because God had chosen them, or did God choose them because they were unique? I'll also add, he doesn't mention this, but I'll add this, which is, when God calls the Jewish people, right, Mamlechet Kohanim v'Goy Kadosh, right, you are my Kohanim, we could really ask the same question, right? Did God choose us because we were unique? And this is a Machlokas Mefarshim, right? The commentators argue, did God choose Avram because he was unique? Or did God just choose Avram? And once he chose Avram, right, the added responsibility pushed Avram to be unique, right? Now, it may be a mix of both, right? And it may be not random, right? It may be that Avram began to show signs of commitment to God, right? And this is really what the Midrash is trying to answer, right? The Midrashim, which say that God recognized, that Avram recognized God at three, are saying that, yeah, Avram chose God, so God chose Avram, right? But, right, there are other possibilities. The Maharal notes the possibility that, no, maybe God just chose Avram because he loved him. Why did he love him? I don't know. He loved him because he loved him. And once he loved him, Avram grew into the role, right? And are the Jewish people always worthy? Maybe yes, right? Or maybe not. The fact that we were chosen is what pushes us to grow into the role. Okay. Now, another question you're going to have to ask is, okay, as we noted, in Bamidbar, the Levim redeem the firstborns. Now, redeeming the firstborns seems to imply that there was a time at which it was supposed to be the firstborns, and then the Levim switched them. So according to Rashi, this is very difficult, because what do you mean? Right? Why would I have to redeem the firstborns with the Levim? That implies that until X moment in the desert, the firstborns were supposed to work in the Mishkan, and then God sort of changed his mind for whatever reason, and now you got to trade. The Levim take the place of the firstborn, but it was really the firstborns were supposed to work in the Mishkan. But according to Rashi, at least as early as Mitzrayim, the designated officers of the Mishkan were always supposed to Levim. So why are the Levim redeeming the firstborns? That doesn't make any sense. It wasn't supposed to be the firstborns. It was always the Levim. So he continues here, and he said, this approach might maintain the firstborns never held any Levite or priestly status. They were sanctified in Egypt because they had been saved from the plague of the firstborn, but it is not accompanied by any ritual role. And switching Levites and firstborn, the firstborn never played a role in divine worship. It's not clear what it means the Levites were chosen to serve in their stead. These sources might explain the redemption of Bamidbar 3 does not imply a substitution of service, but simply a redemption of the firstborn's holy status. Right? You may be led to the conclusion that when the Pasuk says that the firstborns are redeemed by the Levim, it doesn't mean that the firstborns were supposed to work in the Beit HaMikdash and now the Levim trade them. It's just I don't know. When God saved the firstborns, they took on some sanctity, and God set up a rule, you know, a rule of how you're going to de-sanctify them. It has nothing to do with the trade. It's not a trade of work. The Levim were always supposed to work in the Beit HaMikdash. But once they work in the Beit HaMikdash, they can, quote-unquote, redeem the holiness of the Bechor. But it's not a substitution. It's not a trade of the a trade of the Levium. So, possibility one, to summarize that, is the Levium were chosen at least as early as Mitzrayim, maybe, as Jubilee said, as early as Shimon and Levi. So already from the time of Egypt, they weren't working for Paro. They were designated to be the Kohanim and the Levium. When they act uniquely and stand up for God in the Egel, it's not the cause of them becoming the chosen tribe. It's because they already were chosen, and therefore they grew into that role, and they stood up for their unique role. The problem with this position is this notion that the firstborns have to be redeemed, which seems to imply that until that moment, the firstborns were supposed to be the ones working the Mishkan, and then we switch. So you're going to have to justify it and say maybe it's not true. When we say the firstborns were redeemed by the Levim, it doesn't mean the firstborns were supposed to work the Mishkan. It just means that they're holy and that we redeem them. It's a symbolic redemption, but it's not an actual trade of roles. The Levim were always supposed to be the ones working the Mishkan. So that's sort of direction one. Direction two, maybe not. And this is based, starting in number 13. In the middle of Shmos, at some point you have Vayishlach et narei v'nei Yisrael v'yalu olot v'yizbechuz v'achim shlamim l'adonai parim. That certain young men amongst the Jews were designated, and they brought karbanot, and they sacrificed bulls as offerings of well-being to God. So, in Shmos Chav Dalid, you have these Narei B'nai Yisrael who are acting to bring Karbanot. So who are the Narei B'nai Yisrael? So Rashi tells you that they are the Becharot. They're the firstborns. Now this implies that already, right, as late as the period in the Midbar, the firstborns, not only were they supposed to work in the Mishkan, they actually are. They're actually functioning in a ritual role. And now, if they're still functioning in a ritual role, that seems to indicate that the Levium haven't yet been chosen to take their place. The Ramban, on the other hand, says, Alderech HaPshat, right, first he suggests that they're the firstborns, but then he says, Alderech HaPshat, Narei B'nei Yisrael, Hem Bachurei Yisrael, Shelo Tamu Tamchet, Shelo Nikshu Elisha Me'olam. He said, maybe not. Maybe these were just young men who hadn't yet been married, and this was like a unique situation, right? They needed someone to bring Karbanot, so they picked young children who had never been married. This doesn't indicate that the firstborns had a special role. But if you think that this is the firstborns, as Rashi indicates, is a position, the Gemara and Zvachim. So then, you'd be led to the conclusion that no, already in the time of the Midbar, it was still supposed to be the role of the firstborns, and the Levium hadn't yet been chosen. And then, when were the Levium chosen? So, when you read in number 16, in Parshat Bamidbar, Vayidaber Adonai Moshe Lemor, Hakrev et Matei Levi, V'amata Oto Lefnei Aron HaKohen V'Sher Tu Oto, bring the Levium to me, right? You would read that as literally. Only now, the second year into the Midbar, were the Levium actually chosen. Until then, it was supposed to still be the firstborns. In 17, I gave you the Ramban. I actually didn't include the translation on some of these. Okay, I just never got back to it. That's fine. The Ramban writes, Rabbi Tamai, Dabru Hashem el Moshe ben Mar Sinai, Bavur Shezkir, Biyom Diber Hashem et Moshe Bar Sinai, Chazar Vamar, Kilo Aitat Savat, Hapkuda Shel Avim Bar Sinai, Ki Bechirat Toldot Ben Aaron Levad Dam Aita Bahar Sinai, Biyom Savoto, Masa Mishkan. Aval Levi'im lo nitztava v'chiratam bar Sinai rak v'mid bar Sinai b'ol mo'ed. The Ramban says, I'll solve it this way. Split between the Kohanim and the Levi'im. Right? The Kohanim, right? We are grouping together the Levi'im and assuming whenever the Levi'im were chosen, the Kohanim were chosen. But who says? Maybe there were always supposed to be two groups. right? There's really two functions in the Mishkan. There's the Kohanim who work in the Beit HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, and then there's Levim who are their assistants. So the Ramban says maybe all those indications that you have, that there was a unique status already earlier, already in the time of Kabbalah Torah, that's only the Kohanim. But who is going to be the assistant of the Kohanim? That was originally supposed to be the firstborns, and then when they messed up in the Egel, that got switched, and the Levim took on the role of their family members, right, of the Kohanim, and they became their assistants. Once you do that, so then they're counted differently. They're counted from 30 days and up, and not from of 20. Right, so that is first possibility. But then he says, in the middle, he says, "Kivshivto Levi lo yu b'shivud melechet Mitzrayim v'avodat parech b'nei Yisrael asher marua Mitzrayim et chayem v'avodat kasha k'dei l'ma'atam." Right, but he does recognize, he said, okay, but how could it be that the Levim are so few in number? He said, maybe because they weren't enslaved in Egypt, and only the people who were enslaved in Egypt got the special blessings from God and reproduced especially quickly. So even though he thinks that the Levim hadn't been chosen, right, this is where he sort of splits it. He said maybe they were already somewhat unique in Mitzrayim, meaning it was true they weren't enslaved, but despite the fact that they were sort of unique in Egypt, right, they weren't actually chosen. That, I mean, it didn't express itself actually that they would be appointed to work in the Mishkan until later on, until after the sin of the Egel. So, right, the Ramban has this sort of mixed theory that when Shmuel says that the Kohanim were chosen already in Mitzrayim, he means it, right? Because the Kohanim were chosen very, very early. The Levim were somewhat unique already in Mitzrayim, enough that they weren't working in Egypt. They were unique. But in terms of their actually appointment as the workers alongside the Kohanim, that only happens after the Bechor, after the firstborns mess up in the Egel with everybody else, and then we have a switch. So the way you're going to deal with the textual problems is all those psukim that talk about the Levim being chosen earlier refer specifically to the Kohanim. The psukim that indicate the Levim taking their role later refer to the Levim, right, coming into the role at a later time. Okay, now Rashi in Devarim seems to take this direction, right? That the Levim at least were only chosen later, based on the pasuk we saw before, that ba'ed hahi, at the time of the Egel, when the Levim didn't sin with the Jews, that was when they were chosen. So if you look right at pasuk 2 and number 18, ba'ed hahi, right, at that time accordingly means in the first year of the exodus from Egypt, when you sinned by worshiping the golden calf, but the sons of Levi did not thus sin, at that time God separated them from you. Right, and that would be the justification for the Levim being chosen, chosen later. Okay, if you go to 19, so the Sfarno, I never actually heard of this book until I saw it in this context. Here's a book, Kavanat HaTorah, Mar Kavanat HaTorah, and here's his discussion of it. He says as follows, he says, V'chein ra'ui lehit bonein. But we have to look into this matter. Ki amnam kodem lecheira egel tekev achar matan Torah lo Yisrael tzrichem lechol eila lemana sheirut shchinato betocham. So before the Cheir HaEgel, they didn't need so many people to work in the Mishkan. They weren't even commanded about the Mishkan yet. And the whole institution of Karbanot wasn't even necessary until after the Egel. They were never commanded about it. Kamro yitbarach, ki lo dibarti ravotechem, v'lo tziviti biyom motziot ha-meret Mitzrayim, al divrei olav ha-zavach. As God says, I didn't command you regarding Karbanot when you left Egypt. Said, before the Egel, we didn't need a Mishkan. We didn't need a permanent institution to encourage God to dwell among us. Now, this relates to the question of when the mitzvah of the Mishkan came. He's following Rashi's position and not the Ramban's. He says, "V'lo hitchayvu l'shum zevach, v'lo mishkan ukli." Until the sin, we didn't need a Mishkan. And if you want to bring carbon out, so set up a temporary mizbeach. And God said, wherever you mention my name, that's where I'll be. Any place that you call with truth, that'll be my house. Kinyan, batei midrashot. Any place you learn Torah. That's what happened after Matan Torah. And when Moshe came down from Har Sinai, so he gave them the Torah, he gave them the mitzvot. And he didn't tell them anything about Mishkan. But there were mizbeach. And those ad hoc mizbechot, the firstborns, offered it. And that's what the covenant was sealed on. Omnam achar chetam ba'egel gam ki b'tfilat Moshe b'chiro ne'etar laseid chatatam lashot shchinato b'docham. But after the Egel, even though God listened to Moshe's prayer and agreed to bring his spirit back to the Jewish people, im kol zeh amar vasuli mikdash, he said, the only way I'm coming back this time is through a mishkan. V'lo bofan acher ki lo eshiva klal el madriget ma'alatam asher shaya bakodem, because they couldn't return to their high elevated state from before the sin. Because before the Egel, sacrifices only came on a voluntary basis, as righteous people like Avram Yitzchak had already brought in earlier generations, you needed obligatory karbanot. And then there were individual and collective obligatory karbanot, like sin offerings. And then, as the Jews continued sitting, God added commands for even worse karbanot, right? Karbanot of what happens when an entire nation sins. Etc. And then he says, just skip to the last line, he says, he said, once you have that, then you need an independent tribe to do the work. So the Sfarno says, let me explain to you what happened. You know how you have the firstborns doing the work of bringing sacrifices earlier on? That's true. But not because they were meant to work in the Mishkan. Because before the Egel, there was no need for a Mishkan. People just brought it was supposed to be that people brought sacrifices on an ad hoc basis. If you bring sacrifice on an ad hoc basis, you don't need a standing priestly class. So if you just bring it on an ad hoc basis, so the firstborn is the likely people. But once the Jews sinned and God said, I need to formalize my relationship and I'm only going to come and only going to allow you to worship me in the confines of a highly structured Mishkan, well, then you can't rely on firstborns, which is an ad hoc solution. You need a professional priestly class. So the Sfarno says it's not just that after the Egel, we switched the Bechor for the firstborns. It's that maybe the Levim were special earlier. But they weren't special as a priestly class because there was no need for a priestly class because there was never going to be a Mishkan. There was going to be no intermediaries. There was just going to be each family, when they decided they wanted to bring a carbon, they would do it. But when the nature of the relationship of God and the Jewish people changed after the Egel, God needed to find a priestly class. Once you find a priestly class, the most likely candidates are the most perfected tribe. So it wasn't just that the Levim switched the Bechoros, it was that the entire relationship God had with the Jewish people changed after the Egel, and with that, you had to move from the Levim from the Bechoros to Levim. So, to summarize, what we've seen, right, you have one group of thinkers who say the Levim were always, always special. They were always designated, right? Jubilees thinks they were already special from the time of Yaakov. Rashi at least tells us that by the time you got to Mitzrayim, they were unique, they weren't enslaved, they were meant to be the Shevet of God. And the way Rashi understands it, at least in a few places, that even the division between Kohanim and Levim was already existent in Mitzrayim, even if you ended up trading later who was Kohen, who was Levi, but the notion that the Levim would divide up these roles was always going to be true. Then how do you understand why we emphasize their unique role during the Egel? So you have to understand that it wasn't due to their unique reaction to the Egel that they were chosen. It's the opposite. It's because they knew they were unique, right? That gave them the spiritual strength to live up to the role, which is a powerful educational message in and of itself. That's possibility one. Possibility two, the Ramban, which is, let's square the circle as follows. Say that the Kohanim were chosen early, but the Bechoros were supposed to be the assistants to the Kohanim all the way until the Egel. But once there was an Egel, the Bechoros lost their right. And therefore, once the Bechoros lost their right, the Levim took their place with their, you know, half-brothers or whatever, their cousins, however you want to, their cousins, their close relatives, meaning the other members of the tribe of Levi, and switched the Bechoros. So the Kohanim were already in Mitzrayim unique. The Levim were somewhat unique, but they actually didn't have a role. But once the Bechoros couldn't be the ones working the Mishkan, so the Levim had to switch them. The Sfarno introduces what I think is a fascinating theory, is not that there was a Bechor-Levi switch in the time of the Egel, but there was a switch in the whole plan of Judaism, period. Until the Egel, the Jews were not supposed to need a formal place to interact with God. If you don't have a formal place, you don't need a formal priestly class. And therefore, you had an informal carbon structure in an informal world. The most likely representative is each family sends their firstborn to be their intermediary between them and God. They're represented, bring carbonot. Once the Jews sin, God says, I'll come back to you, but under different circumstances, under different conditions. This time you've got to be formalized. You've got to be, right? I see that without structure you don't do well, so let me give you some structure. But if you need structure, you also need, right, a bureaucracy, right? If you need spiritual structure, you need spiritual bureaucracy. So it wasn't just that the Levim were chosen later, but it was actually the relationship that the Jewish people had with God was radically changed after the Egel, and that's why the Levim are chosen. So those are sort of three perspectives on, right, the relationship between the Jews and the rest of Klal Yisrael, when it was that they became unique. The last thing I gave you on the Kohanim, the last thing I gave you here from 20 and on is just one last point to make about the Levim, which is that if you actually look in Bamidbar, the Levim seem to be unique for one of two very different reasons, right? Rav Bazak points to that. Then Bamidbar 1 and 2, the Torah just tells you that the reason the Levim are not counted amongst the Jewish people is because they don't go to war. Right? You don't find out yet they work in the Mikdash. They don't go to war. That's why they're unique. Then suddenly in Bamidbar 3, you find out that not only do they not go to war, but it's not just they don't go to war and they sit and do nothing. They have a different role. And he notes that the Torah seems to go out of its way to divide these. Right, I gave it to you here, 21 and 20, and 2, apparently. It started renumbering, right? But you should look at the Pesukim carefully, right? Number 21. Ha-Levim lo-matei avodam lo-ad-bakidu b'docham. The Levim weren't counted. Vay-daber adonayam lo-shel le-mor. Ach-matei levi lo-tif-kod. Retrosham lo-tisa. B'toch b'nei Yisrael, right? Don't count the Levim. Don't count the Levim. Don't count the Levim. But you don't find out what they're supposed to do. They're just not counted, right? In the last source on the page, which is this recounted 2, only in Bamidbar 3 do you find out that, come, I want you to work for me in the Mishkan. So Rav Bazak in the middle notes as follows. He said that we therefore conclude that our parsha reflects two different aspects of the selection of the Levium. The first selection described in chapter 1 arises from the sanctity of the Levium as a whole, as it was sanctified for God's service in the wake of the sin of the golden calf. From this perspective, the Levium serve in the Mishkan with no connection to the Kohanim, and they have a camp of their own surrounded by the Mishkan. According to the other perspective, as reflected in chapter 3, the source of the holiness of the Levium is actually the prior selection of the firstborn. The Levium are simply the replacement of the firstborn. This perspective diminishes the role and status of the Levium. They are considered merely as ministering to the Kohanim and aiding them in the service of the Mishkan. So what Bazak says is, you know what? These two ideas that we have at some level both exist. The fact that the Levium were unique, you know, that was true always. That has nothing to do with the fact they work in the Mishkan. Right? They were always unique. The fact that they're the ones that dwell in the Machane Shechina around, or the Machane Levia, the camp around the Mishkan, that they're the protectors of the Mishkan, that was always true. That's not connected to their role, so to speak, in the Avoda itself. And he said that's what it says in Bamidbar Aleph and Bet, is the Levim aren't counted because they don't go to war and they camp closer to the Mishkan. They aren't part of the outer camp, they're the inner camp. The fact that the Levim are not only sort of a unique tribe that happens to be more spiritual, but they actually have to take on the role of, you know, religious bureaucrats, right? That is a later addition. That's only when the Bechor sins. So Bazak suggested maybe both are really true. Is that at some level, yes, the Levim were always special. They were always going to be the teachers in Klal Yisrael. They were always going to be the people that dwelled around the Mishkan, the people that represented God, the people that were educators. But they weren't going to be the religious bureaucracy. They weren't actually going to work in the Mishkan. They were just going to be, you know, the spiritual upper class. When did they have to actually take on the role? Only when the Bechoris messed up, and then the Kohanim needed helpers. Right? Then they said, we're not only going to be special, but we're going to have a responsibility. So the Levium, you know, had sort of two levels of sanctity, one which always existed and one which came later. So that really follows the Ramban's suggestion, right? That the Levium weren't enslaved in Egypt, they were unique, but they never actually took on a formal role until after the Bechoris messed up. So what you get, therefore, is this question of when did Levim become special and why did they become special? So you have, again, one group of thinkers who say they were always special and always meant to work in the Mishkan, either because of what, you know, according to Jubilees, because of what they did in the time of Dina, or whatever you think it is, but they were always supposed to be special, they always were special. Now, according to Jubilees, they were chosen to be special because of what they did in the time of Shimon, Levi, and Dina. Another possibility is, they didn't do anything to become special, they just were special. And that's why they act in a special way, because they were chosen. That made them live it up to it. That's one right possibility. Second possibility is they were totally chosen after the Bechoris messed up. Right? The middle possibility is to say, maybe they were somewhat unique. They were meant to be the teachers, who knows, already in Egypt. That's why they were unique. They weren't enslaved. But because they were somewhat unique, when the nature of the relationship of God and the people changed, the way the Sfarno takes it, right? Now there was a need for Mishkan and religious bureaucracy. So the people who were already going to be the teachers became the functionaries in the Mishkan. But that component was a later addition. Or the Kohanim were chosen earlier, the Kohanim were chosen earlier, the Levium were chosen later. And what comes out again is these two very different perspectives on the question, what is it that makes Levium unique? Right? One group says Levium are unique because they were chosen. The other says they're chosen because they were unique, right? And as I said, that question really, because Bnei Yisrael are also called Mamlach Ganim Goy Kadosh, right, forces us to ask the same question on a broader level, which is our uniqueness as a people, because we showed uniqueness in the time of Avram, right, or because we were chosen, right, that's what pushed us to be unique, and the truth is, it might be somewhere in the middle, right, that we, as a people, showed certain promising, character traits, but what really makes us unique is that once God chose us, we live up to the responsibility that was put on our shoulders, right? And the way you see with the Levim, that it's some mix of them having always been unique and them becoming unique because they had been chosen. With the Jewish people, it's the same thing. That at some level, we were always special in the time of Avram. At some level, we only are special because we live up to the responsibility that was given to us. So it's important to understand both of those levels, both the actual uniqueness of the Levim and the extent to which the Levim and the Kohanim act as a microcosm of the way that we relate to our uniqueness as a people. So that I'll leave it, and next week we'll continue with the laws of Bamidbar a bit, or at least in Naso, and then we'll